matter, other animals that live in the world around us. These days, it's hard to go any place on the planet where you don't hear humans. Even in a remote forest, you can hear a plane flying overhead. And, of course, in highly urbanized areas where there's a lot of people, there's even more sound. And there's, in particular, this low-pitched, deep sort of throbbing hum that is the hum of humanity in a city. And what we're finding is that birds in cities and highly urbanized areas actually sing differently than the same species of birds living in more rural areas where there's less human noise. So, for example, because of that very low-pitched throbbing hum of humanity that you find in a city, city birds tend to sing at higher pitches, higher frequencies than do birds out in the more wooded rural areas where there isn't so much human noise. So birds are adjusting to the noise we make, and they're probably adjusting in a lot of ways other than just frequency, and we're just starting to understand that.
Mike Webster, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks very much for having me. It has been a pleasure.
And for doing so at a frequency that we can hear.
Mike Webster is a professor of neurobiology and behavior and director of the Macaulay Library at Cornell University. You can find a link to the Macaulay Library on our website, bigpicturescience.org.
Let's hear it for our production team, Gary Niederhoff and Barbara Vance.
And the support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David and the NASA Astrobiology Institute. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, and a big thanks also to our listeners.
Your ears have been attuned to Sounds Abound, and you can find more Big Picture Science on iTunes and through the link on our website. And while you're online, check out and perhaps download our Big Picture Science app. You can find it on iTunes, Android, and Windows 8.
And if you're a podcast listener, but you prefer over-the-air radio because you like the idea of sound modulations converted to radio frequency modulations, well, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, well, consider letting them know you like the show.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and yes, we are on the list, of course. Every Tuesday from noon to 1 o'clock, we feature Big Picture Science. Today, slightly abridged in format because of technical difficulties, but if you want to hear that episode or any others in their entirety, you can just go directly to the website, radio.seti.org, radio.seti.org. And now it's time for the Dearborn Heights News and Views, part of our Tuesday forum. Welcome to the Tuesday Forum, Dearborn Heights News and Views, a program devoted entirely to the issues of interest to the residents of the city of Dearborn Heights, Michigan, and I think the Dearborn community, the nearby communities, too. So here we are at Henry Ford Community College, and my name is Jay Koronek, station advisor, and in the studio we have our special guest, and Ned Apigian, Dearborn City Councilman, is going to do the introductions and get us started with the interview.
Thank you, Jay. Our guest today is not only one of the most important people who work for the city of Dearborn Heights, there's at least three of them, including the mayor, and she is Elizabeth Sabota Perry. Mrs. Perry is in charge of human resources in the city, and those of you before the hour is over are going to be amazed exactly what people in human resources do. But at first, before we get into all the things she does, and we break it down into hopefully sections that are understandable, have to do with civil service, police, fire, regular employees, how people in the department can move up from one department to the other, how outside people are hired, we're going to ask Elizabeth to tell us something about yourself, Elizabeth.
Sure.
Thank you.
First, thank you very much, Ned, for having me today. So I think the first important thing about me is that I'm a lifelong resident of Dearborn Heights.
That's it.
That's celebrating our 50th anniversary. I actually am a graduate from Divine Child High School. I have a bachelor's degree from Madonna University and a master's degree from U of M. So I actually have been at the city since 2007. February of 2007 is when I assumed the responsibility for the human resource director position. And I've been here at Henry Ford Community College for a little longer as an adjunct instructor.
I was going to make sure you told us about that. Tell us what an adjunct instructor does in what field.
So actually I'm in the business and economics division, so I teach business math. So I teach the class that everyone waits to their last final possibility time to take it, and then they come in kind of kicking and screaming. But it's been a...
Is that right, Jay?
Well, I've heard rumors, everybody needs math, and sometimes the basics sort of slip through the cracks. So it's good to get that review, or in some cases, it's their first taste of serious math. And if it involves economics, like budgets and things, that's kind of important, I would suspect. So maybe you can. I'm sure you make the case for the importance. Whether or not they're listening.
I didn't realize math was a big part of human resources, but I'm going to. I learned a lot today.
Payroll. That's what I tell my students. Hey, if you want to get paid, you have to learn how to do payroll, too. So, taxes, how to calculate taxes. So, actually, this has been a perfect match of jobs.
And a couple times I've asked you about health insurance, too. That's another thing we've got to write down, health insurance. Also, tell us about your husband is also a professor.
Yeah, my husband's full-time here at Henry Ford Community College in the political science division, so social sciences.
That pretty well wraps it up. And
he's also a lifelong member of resident of Dearborn Heights. So
there you go. Now, also, your family's going to increase by two.
Three.
Tell us something about that, about yourself.
Yep,
too.
So we recently found out that we've been matched with three little girls from an orphanage in Warsaw, Poland. And so we had an opportunity to meet them the second week in July, and we hope to finalize the adoption fall. I would love to have them home, especially for the holiday season, although... we're at the mercies of two governments.
Absolutely.
So, we'll soon have three more Dearborn Heights residents living in our house. So.
And that takes us up to something over 57,000 plus.
Yeah, so someone needs to break the news to the dog.
And how old are these children to be?
So 4 years old is the eldest, and then the middle child will be three in less than a month, and then the baby will be two in 2 months. So 4, 3, and 2 by the time I get them home.
Oh, my God. I hope we're not going to lose you as the human resource person.
You are not. You are not.
Thank God for that. Yes. Well, that pretty well summarizes as much as we can understand about who Elizabeth is. And I can tell you she is a credit to the city. Now, in general terms, I'll allow you to make the definition, like what does a human resource person do in Dearborn Heights? God knows what it involves somewhere else. Here, I'm sure you're doing two or three things you wouldn't do somewhere else.
Right. So actually, someone from Henry Ford had once told me that my job was going to be like popcorn, and he had it right because he had assumed a responsibility similar in another municipality. And so every day is different. So I always say that we are involved in the hiring, the firing, the disciplining, the bargaining agreements, but there's so much more. There's so many details among those big processes, So really, if you look at kind of the lifespan of employment from the very beginning, from when you put in your application or even when you see that newspaper ad, the Human Resource Department is the one that put that newspaper ad about that job opening into the paper. And then you put in your application. It's the Human Resource Department that looks at the information, that either puts you through a testing process. For the city of Dearborn Heights, for all of our full-time, it's civil service. I know you want to talk about that a little later. Mm-hmm. So that involves a very very succinct testing process, a testing and interview process.
Explain testing. That's an area I want to get into because sure. It's different for different disciplines.
Right. So I think a lot of people, when they drop off an application and resume, think we're just going to review it and we will interview them based on their credentials. I'm not saying that we won't. However, we first always do a written test for any sort of full-time opening. So that includes police and fire, general clerical.
And it's not a test you make up. It's tests we buy,
it
we
is.
Make up. And I see the bills for them, and I'm always amazed, what in the world is this $8,000 for?
Right.
A test for a specific job.
Right. We work with a couple of companies that provide standardized, validated tests. So they're fair to the people that are taking them. And depending on how many people actually, you know, sign up for the job, we've had as high as 423 applicants for one position for a 911 civilian dispatcher.
Lord have mercy. Things are tough out there, right,
yeah.
Jay?
Yeah, and as long as you made a connection to me, I think the burning question for some of our listeners is, what jobs are available right now? Do you have some posted right now? Just wondering. I mean, sometimes you have a lot more, and there's because of retirements or people move and leave and so on. But I'm just at this point, which is the 13th of August, 2013, are there any job openings in Dearborn Heights?
There are, and thank you for asking me because I was going to plug it.
Oh,
so
I didn't even think
of we can plug it again later.
So my most important position that's open, and it's just open, actually tomorrow the application will go live, is for firefighter entry.
I was going to say firefighter without knowing.
Entry-level firefighter. And so Dearborn Heights is among many communities that have received a federal grant, a SAFER grant, and so we've been the recipient. So we have some openings today, and we're going to have even more openings come the winter because we have some people that will be retiring. And so we are looking to bring on some firefighters today and then also have a list for later in the year, if not the beginning of 2014. So to be considered for firefighter, you have to have 60 college credits. That isn't always the case in other communities, but it is for Dearborn Heights. That's our Act 78 rules and regs. And completion of Fire Academy. So that would be Firefighter 1 and Firefighter 2. There's classes that are specific. So those people that are in the field, they know what Firefighter 1 and 2 means. And then you also have to be complete it with your paramedics and be licensed or be on the verge of being licensed and be licensed at the time of at the time that you actually would start.
And I understand Dearborn Heights is very fussy about our requirements for firefighters in the emergencies. Is that correct?
Well, we have advanced life support, so you have to have a paramedics license. Not every community has paramedics licenses, but our firefighters are both paramedics as well as firefighters, and we do require 60 college credits, which is different than some other communities.
Which made it a little impossible for people that got let go in other communities to qualify for us. You might want to mention that.
Yeah, we did have a few people that joined from other departments, but it is true what you just stated, that sometimes, even though they've had 15 years experience in another department, they come to Dearborn Heights, and I can't even accept their application because they don't have that.
Is there information about the current job openings at the Dearborn Heights City website?
It will be published tomorrow morning.
It will be, okay.
Yep.
All right.
And actually, it will be in the Detroit Free Press on Sunday, and will be in the Press and mm-hmm. Guide, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mm-hmm. By the way, their website, folks, is one of those long ones, but it was free, so they didn't have to pay money to get it. It is www.ci, which probably is the beginning of city, I guess, dot Dearborn-Heights.mi.us. So if you just want to search for Dearborn Heights, Michigan, for example, I don't think there's another Dearborn Heights in the whole U.S., you'll get to the city website and then look under Human Resources or call Elizabeth Sabota Perry directly, you know, at 313-791-3420, but you probably don't want to be called daily by someone looking for a job, but nonetheless. I noticed also that there is on the website, there is something that they can download called the General Employment Application. So if they are interested in, well, like anything you might have available, they could fill that out, put in their resume with that, no doubt, and then
you'd be on the list.
You could look down that. If there's openings, you probably would call those people first if you thought they were qualified?
Correct. So actually, for anyone that's interested in just general employment, in particular, part-time employment for the libraries, part-time clerical, for instance, recreation department's looking for part-time clerical, part-time custodian. If they drop off an application and a resume, we will keep them on file at least for 6 months, and we will refer to that pile of applications that we get. I mean, we will also recruit more. So when someone tells us, hey, I need to leave my shelving position at the library, we can refer to those, and a person would indicate what position they would be interested in. And we usually ask if it's blank when they come to see us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so covering, this is an interesting category to conclude our first quarter with, people not associated with the city. In other words, there are people that look at posted jobs, which we haven't talked about, of which you can jump from one to another provided you qualify for the salary grade. But so those outside, even though they don't see a particular announcement, can send an application to Human Resources, and it would be alive for 6 months, of which it's a resource for you to look into.
Correct.
Well, that's great. That brings us almost to the end of the first quarter hour, and I'm going to go into a station ID. You are listening to the Heights News and Views, a monthly talk show program presented on the second Tuesday of every month, right here on WHFR on 89.3 FM, making waves from the Henry Ford Community College radio station broadcasting from Dearborn, Michigan. Your hosts today are myself, Ned Apigian, a present councilman in the city of Dearborn Heights, and our station
advisor.
Advisor. I was going to say the boss, sounds better.
No, I just advise.
And our guest today is Elizabeth Sabota Perry, who is the Human Resource Director of the city of Dearborn Heights. And she is full of information about what a human resource director does. We've covered generally how an outsider answers an ad. And then I hope that she goes into the let's talk about the testing.
Okay.
For example, the company was educational to me to find out where the tests come from, and then how people qualify on the testing. The tests are different for every discipline, and sometimes you have no candidates after the testing. So tell us how that testing works.
Sure. So I think that civilian...
For each, the different categories.
Sure. So I think civilian dispatcher really sets a good pace for what the testing procedure is. So because of the sheer numbers that we get, we will use a general aptitude test to kind of figure out who we're going to invite to the simulation test. So this general aptitude test, we've gotten it from a couple different companies. One of the companies that we love to use is the Wunderlich. Wunderlich is the company that has some general aptitude tests, and it's a nice test because it's 50 questions and you answer as many as you can in 12 minutes.
12 minutes, wow.
So what we like about the test is
get to find out how swift they are.
How fast can they read?
Yeah. And especially for civilian dispatcher, because civilian dispatcher, when they answer the call, you got to figure out if they can think it through quickly or not. So we like this test because, first of all, with the sheer number of people, we're able to test all of our candidates that come in with the general, meet the general.
And categorize them.
Exactly. Then we invite usually the top 50 to 75 individuals in for the simulation test. So the simulation test has a written component, so you're answering multiple choice questions. And, you know, a little bit of reading, and you'll be answering questions of that. It's multiple choice. And then you listen to mock 911 calls, and you're asked to revert back and answer some questions after those calls, after you've listened to all the calls. So that is a longer test. It's about 2 to 3 hours. And
Where do these tests take place? Elizabeth?
So most of them I've been hosting in the beautiful Dearborn Heights Library, the North End Library at the Carolyn Kennedy.
Oh, right, because I never see it going on in the City Hall.
Right. What's nice about it is that we have desks that we can move. We have a PA or a intercom so they can actually listen to the 911 tapes. If I need to use the computer, there's a drop-down screen. So that's why we've been using the library setting. Plus, they're beautiful buildings, so I love for people to walk in there. Then after 70% is our cutoff score, so you have to reach a 70% to be invited for an interview, and then we have a panel interview. It can be 3 to 4 people. Usually for dispatch, we have a high-ranking member of the fire department as well as a high-ranking member of the police department, usually myself, and we could have an additional person either from the Civil Service Commission or maybe another dispatcher, senior level dispatcher, and we have an interview. But unfortunately, because everyone passes the test, 75 interviews would be way too many, so we usually take the top 15 people and interview them. Then what happens is you get 50% of your written score, or the simulation score, and 50% of your oral score or interview score. We add those together. That's the number that you will be ranked on a civil service list. For general government in the city of Dearborn Heights, the department head has their choice of the top 3 candidates. We have provisions, obviously, if there's ties. So if we have one opening, we can, even if the list has 25 people on it, we can only choose for that first opening one of those top 3 people. We refer to those lists. Our lists are good for 2 full years, which is different from some other communities. Some lists are only good for a year, some are 6 months, but in Dearborn Heights, it's 2 years. So this is true for everything in general government, top 3. Now, police and fire, we also have a testing procedure. So there's a written test. So for this firefighter position that's open, there will be a written test. So when a person puts in an application, they will know the date of the written test. They'll come to the written test. If they score, in this case, it's going to be an 80%. So if they score an 80% or higher, they could be invited for an interview. We will most likely invite the top 10 to 20 people in for an interview, and again, it's a panel style interview, and 50% of the written score and 50% of the oral board will serve as their total compilation score. And what this time the department head, in this case the fire chief, he will have his choice of the top 5 candidates. So police and fire, for those civil service lists, it's top 5 candidates. For general government, it's top 3 candidates.
So everything is under civil service?
Correct, in terms of our full-time union and most non-union.
What are the civil service laws, rules, or regulations that you have to live with?
Yeah, I was going to just supplement that. I was thinking, too, of course, the hiring procedures and the testing is, it all has to be very fair, and you have to get the right people finally. And, of course, record management, I mean, to actually keep, you know, who these people are. But then in terms of proper pay and so on, you have to send a variety of information to the state of Michigan, right? Because it's city government, and therefore it's public pensions are involved, as well as maybe the federal government in terms of taxes and so on. So there's all those, all that information that has to flow from your office regularly, in fact, as well as when, at the startup time. And that has to be accurate. That's a big responsibility. I think we all assume that. But maybe you can go into maybe some of the ongoing information that's required, like to civil service or whatever. Is it, is there, I would think it's at least annually or maybe monthly, that there has to be updates, and things change too,
yep,
don't they?
Yeah, so you're right. Actually, both civil services have regular scheduled meetings once a month. To be honest, the Act 78, which is the police and fire, we have been meeting even more than once a month because of how much activity we've had. We have had a lot of recruitment, but more importantly, we have a lot of retirements that are coming up, including some in the upper echelons in these departments.
So the Act 78 is a civil service commission, which has to do with fire and police.
Correct, and it was the state law, state act, 1935, I think, is the date on it. So our rules and regulations are
in the, it's, if The way these numbers come about, as I'm learning, like Act 51 with gas or highway sharing, has to do with the year it's done and the number of the act, like it would be Act 78, 1935.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then since you got us into Act 78, you want to explain how you get on the commission and what they do?
Sure. So it's a three-member commission. There is one appointment from the mayor, one appointment from those members who are part of Act 78. In other words, they are elected by the police personnel and the fire personnel. So a person could consider themselves a candidate, register with the clerk's office, and then the clerk's office sends out ballots to both police and fire personnel, and they would vote on their person. It's a six-year term. And then
it's one of them. It's one of the policemen or one of the firemen?
Nope. In general, it's been their current representative is James Kitlerick. He's a retired captain from the fire department, but he assumed this responsibility after he was retired. They've had other people just usually active in the community, know what's going on in the police and fire, have an interest in it. Of course, it helps to...
If it makes sense for them to go to their retirees that have had high positions.
Well, you certainly want an objective board, too, so you need some people who have knowledge and experience maybe outside of police and fire on some of these commissions, appointed by the mayor, that's what we said?
Right, there's one that's appointed by the mayor.
One that's appointed by the mayor.
And then one that's elected by the personnel, and then the third appointment is appointed by the commission.
Okay.
So there's agreed upon commission member. So currently we...
You know, I didn't know this.
Yeah.
Well, that's why we're here, Ned.
Hey, I find it that's why I do this. I get to learn about it.
Yeah, so for the last 25 years, we've had a president of the commission, Mr. Dwight Vincent.
I was going to say, who liked Dwight Vincent, who's an attorney in town?
Yeah, Dwight Vincent... was a wonderful, wonderful person to work with. He has the highest respect of everyone in my office.
And he moved to Holland.
And he moved
to Holland.
Yeah, so he is the one that really has really built the Act 78 Commission for Dearborn Heights, and he's really put things together that probably would never have been put in place without a man of his vision. So we agreed to carry on his legacy.
The mayor just appointed.
Yep. So Mr. Anthony Residio.
Yeah, I had difficulty pronouncing his name. Residio. And I asked him what his claim to fame was. I wasn't sure. I thought maybe he was an attorney as well, but he isn't.
Yeah, right. And then we have Mr. Marty Crandall is currently serving as the president of the commission.
And Mr. Crandall's claim to fame
His background is he is an attorney.
Oh, he is an attorney. And then the firefighters and the police. So there's two Act 78 commissions, or the police and the fire get to pick one each?
Nope, they agree on one person.
Oh.
Yep.
That's...
Which shows you how good Mr. Kitlerick really is, because he's neutral enough to... be an advocate for police and for not only his department that he retired from.
You just have to be a recipient of a pension, and that qualifies you. Yes.
Are there other city commissions that have appointments to them by the mayor? I mean, in Dearborn, oh my gosh, we got a City Beautiful Commission, we got a Telecommunications Commission. I'm not sure that they're mandated by... anything, but they may be in the city charter here in Dearborn. I think there must be at least six or seven. But Act 78, that's the actual legal responsibility to create that commission.
Correct. And so we also have a general government civil service panel, and the makeup is exactly the same way in that there's one appointment from the mayor, one board appointment, and then one appointment from the personnel.
The personnel being
the
moderately employed people.
Right.
Secretaries and...
you got it. That also includes civilian dispatchers, so it's everyone who is... So I'm an appointed position, so I would not have a say, and the elected officials don't have a say. But everybody else, whether they're union, they could be in the AFSCME union, or just general civil service.
Are they four-person commissions?
No, nope, it's just a three. It's a three.
What do we call that commission? What doesn't have a number? It's just... It's unlike the X.
Oh, what do we call it? I just call it the General Government Civil Service Commission.
There you go. That's the word we're looking for.
But we do have other commissions, the City Beautiful Commission. You know, there are pension boards, that independent pension boards, that some have an appointment from the mayor.
Very important. Like 98% of our pensions are funded in the pension board. Reading their minutes is interesting.
An issue keeps coming up in Dearborn. We have a lot of these commissions, and I'd say they're more general service or value to the community rather than specific hiring, firing, responsibilities that are extremely important. I'm not saying having a beautiful city is not important, but some of the issues that come up here is that, like, we have six or seven, or usually seven, it's an odd number, seven people appointed, and, like, half don't show up most of the time. And so they can't make decisions. And this has to do with some local ordinances about what business is going to go in a certain neighborhood. And last year, if I'm not mistaken, we went about 6 or 7 months back and forth on, what is it called, the Planning Commission? People not showing up, and they couldn't decide whether or not they would let a Goodwill store open in Dearborn. And it might have been decided a lot sooner if people would show up, and if they didn't have enough, they didn't have a quorum. Apparently, there's no sort of responsibility here. It's just the mayor that either appoints or kicks them out, I guess, or whatever. Although at one point we had a little scandal, the head of the city council sort of found a way to get somebody off a council that he didn't like. Oh, my gosh. So I hope you don't have that kind of politics going on. But what about attendance policies? Certainly if there's only three people on some of these commissions, everybody knows when somebody doesn't show up, and then stuff is really tough. I mean,
these commissions,
very important. It's not just sort of a thank you for your support.
These commissions,
political advantage appointments,
like the pension board. I mean, they meet once a month, and I know we get their minutes to read them if you're interested.
Wow, minutes! That's great.
Their minutes of their meetings are now some of the important ones, like the pension board. I'll file those minutes by month, but the City Beautiful Commission, I might not even read it, but. I might read it and I don't, and delete it. I'm not that interested. It's not that important. But a lot of these commissions are rewards for, supporting somebody during an election or something.
Well,
they're not all that
yeah.
important. They're not.
So it doesn't matter if they're absent some. But some of these other things, like the Planning Commission, that has to do with various ordinances and that, it seems the City Council is constantly throwing issues to them. And then it delays it for months and months and months. We had a garage use ordinance issue that finally was, like, resolved by the commission. It hasn't been voted on by the council, but
I thought
the council could just make these decisions, but they're too political. They don't want to seem like they're on one side or the other. They just want to vote up or down something from the commission, and then if somebody criticizes their actions, they say, well, it was what the commission recommended to us. You can't blame us. I don't know. I'm just I don't see that unless they're professionals and it's required by law to act a certain way and so on. I don't see that that's really helpful. Although many issues that are that come up in cities do get over polarized reactions, and they become hot button things, and people get all the controversy generated. Sometimes it's better to slow things down and try to look and deliberate, maybe not on the record so much, in some of these commissions. I don't know. So how many commissions did you say you had then? Mandated by law, but also appointed by the...
I only mayor? Work with two of them, but there are... We have a planning commission, we have a City Beautiful commission, we have a disability commission, so...
So you're not concerned because they don't get paid, so you're not concerned about it in your
Yeah,
office.
Ours only get a small stipend, a $50 stipend, but, we've never had a problem with attendance. To have a quorum, we have to have two people. We usually schedule the meetings around their schedules. Yeah. We have a regular schedule, and everyone kind of is respectful of it.
Okay.
And then if someone is going to be on vacation or a holiday falls, we change things.
Well, we're going to take just a slight break for some public service announcements here on the Tuesday Forum, which this week, this is August 13th, 2013, is the Dearborn Heights News and Views Show every month, second Tuesday, right here on WHFR. And, of course, the show is available as a podcast from our website, too, anytime after broadcast. But we'll be back. I had a question. We can go any direction you want to, Ned and Elizabeth, but labor relations.
Yeah, that's a good. Let me give another as to who we're, you are listening.
Wait until we come back.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. That's right.
We're going to do it. All right. Here we go.
What is that?
Oh, that? It's my time machine.
Does it work?
Sure. Just hit this button.
Whoa, dinosaurs. Cool.
Or we can go here.
Hey, that's Napoleon.
Oui.
Or we can go to the future.
Wow. Hey, you have this nice house. Do I have a nice house?
No, you didn't save any money. Always spent it on vacations and stuff.
If only there was a way I could go back in time and correct that bad habit.
Yep. Okay, the time machine is not real, but the saving thing is. Get in the habit of putting some of your money in savings each week through a 401k, savings account, or financial investments. Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy tips on saving, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org.
What does this crazy little button do?
No!
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
It's that time of year. Time to register at Henry Ford Community College for the 2013 fall semester. Most of the classes that you will take at Henry Ford Community College will transfer to major four-year institutions in the area. Also, HFCC has some of the lowest tuition rates around. First-time students can go to the Welcome Center on campus. Call 800-585-HFCC or go to the web at www.hfcc.edu for more information. Fall semester starts August 22nd, so register today to get the best choice for classes. See you there.
Give my regards to Broadway, remember me to Herald Square. Tell all the gang on 42nd Street that I will soon be there.
I'm Joe, host of The Best of Broadway. Every Tuesday from 2 to 4 p.m., we bring you the score of a Broadway musical as well as individual theatrical numbers. For the best in musical theater and theatrical music, join me and the gang on 42nd Street for The Best of Broadway, Tuesdays from 2 to 4 p.m. here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
Give my regards to old Broadway and say that I'll be there ere long.
This is the Tuesday Forum, and for this week, it is Dearborn Heights News and Views. And my co-host here is Ned Apigian, Dearborn City Councilperson.
And our guest today is none other than Elizabeth Sobata Perry. She is the human resource person in the city of Dearborn Heights, full of information, and we got a lot more to learn. So, Elizabeth, why don't you briefly go through firing and disciplining? What kind of rules, regulations, what kind of things do the employees have going for them? And that leads us into union problems, I would think.
Sure. Okay. So, in general, our employees are not at will. So, at will employees are people of like myself. I'm an appointed position. So, if the mayor wanted to replace me, the mayor technically could replace me. Okay, without going through a due process, what we would call where you would write up a person, mm-hmm. a verbal reprimand, then a written, then a suspension of a couple of days or a week or whatever, and then a termination. So our civil service employees, as well as our union employees, are subject to a very formal process.
Can you be a civil service employee without being in a union?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. What's an example of
that? An example would be our library personnel.
Oh, the part-time people?
Nope, the full-time. All the full-time people. And then if you look at the assessing office, they have appraisers, mm-hmm. and those are
Full-time jobs.
Full-time jobs.
And some part-time ones.
Yeah, but so it's the full-time jobs that fall under civil service. The part-time could be, you know,
so they don't falling. Have civil service protection in terms?
Correct. Correct. So civil service protection in that if there was an appeal. So, for instance, if a person was terminated, even it could be a probationary person. So a person that has been, that is employed with the city on a full-time basis but is not yet a union member. Some cases, it's 6 months before you become a union member. If you got terminated and you disagreed with that termination, you could make an appeal to your respective civil service commission. And if it was in police or fire, they would actually, that civil service commission would have the power to either overturn and provide a recommendation to the mayor. So the general government civil service has only the power to provide a recommendation to the mayor in regards to that termination. So that they recommend that a termination be upheld or they recommend that the termination be reconsidered.
Okay, let's go to the unions. That's
sure.
More fun.
Yes.
Each one of them have different rules, regulations.
Yep. So, but there's a lot of similarities, a lot of parallels. So we have 8 unions in the city, which sounds like a lot. However, you have to consider this, that even in the police department, we have 2 separate unions. We have a command officers, and then we have the patrol officers.
How about the firemen?
Firefighters only have 1 union. They have one. One union.
So it doesn't parallel in that.
It does not, yep. But then even the dispatchers, they're a separate union, but they all fall under the same POAM, but they're separate unions, the separate contracts. We have court employees, and the court employees are also a separate union. We have AFSCME. AFSCME is the largest union that we have, and that oversees our laborers in general government, so like our Department of Public Works, our custodian staffs, ordinance officers, animal control, all clerical and bookkeeping staff members are all members of AFSCME. That's our largest union.
Okay, what do the letters stand for?
American Federation.
Service?
Community? Employees. I bet it.
Yeah.
Employees
yeah.
at the end anyway. All right.
It's a large national organization, this AFSCME.
And it's Teamsters?
It's AFSCME.
What affiliation? It's their own organization.
Yeah.
Okay. Because yeah. I don't... Well, we must have them in Dearborn, right?
Absolutely, you must.
Actually,
I don't think I've ever heard of that acronym.
Do you have Teamsters?
I don't know.
I think
something
you might
to
have
find
Teamsters.
Out. Okay.
I know Livonia has.
I just haven't heard that acronym here.
SIEU is the service workers, like the restaurant workers thing that you hear. But AFSCME is mostly city workers of some sort.
Okay. Well, fine.
How many employees do we have in the city now? About 200 what?
Today, 242 employees.
Okay. And how many retirees do we have?
So we have a little more than that. So about 260 retirees, I would say, today. Now, however, those numbers are going to shift a little bit in the next
few weeks. That's a good number. I've always, we're talking about 500 people.
Right.
This is probably too picky here, and you've already given us, six of those 8 union contracts.
Right.
There was two smaller groups?
So Carpenters Union.
Oh, Carpenters,
and then
okay.
Department of Public Works has a supervisors group, and they're a supervisors association.
I wonder how that all comes about. Okay. That's
some
fine.
Of these,
Thank
like
you.
Carpenters,
you
have
so the
3 people in it.
Yeah, so the Carpenters actually fall under our building inspectors. So we have a plumbing inspector, mechanical inspector. They fall under the Carpenters Union.
Already.
Mechanical, plumbing, and what was the other one?
Well,
electrical.
We have electrical, building, general building, which we're looking for part-time plumbing and building inspectors.
Now, you have employees who aren't in unions, yes?
Correct.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, like our library personnel, none of them are organized into a union. We have some staff in the assessing office that are non-union. The elected officials, obviously, are not in a union, and then there are those of us who are appointed positions. So all of the directors and department heads, we are non-union, and we're appointed by the mayor. And then any deputies, so we have our deputy recreation director, if we had a deputy fire or a deputy police, that person would not be in the union. The deputy fire chief is the only deputy who is in a union at this time.
What about building inspectors?
They fall under that carpenters.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, taking notes here for the quiz that comes up after the show.
Well, it's interesting to compare. One of the things I want to come out of, is it unusual, like when a retiree passes away and he's getting $2,000 a month, his spouse would get half of that, $1,000 a month. Is that unusual? Is that common? Is that pretty much the way it is with everybody?
Yeah, so if you look at municipal pensions or even probably state pensions as it relates to teachers, there is a surviving benefit, but it's only to the spouse. Mm-hmm. Now, there are some situations in which a person would not be able to have a surviving spouse. For instance, if a person had a disability, they received a disability retirement, and they were under the particular age in which they would be eligible. So a lot of people, you have to be 55, 65. It depends if police or fire.
So if they pass, their surviving spouse is not entitled to...
If they do not reach the normal retirement age, whatever that's defined by in ordinance...
Usually 65.
Then their spouse would not receive a
disability
pension, a surviving pension benefit.
Because the person was on a disability.
Disability and did not reach the normal pension.
Well, after our next break, I want to go into the police and fire because that's the most important one, the most expensive. Some of their arrangements, it would be nice for the public to find out how they work.
Yes, and I'd like to make sure we sneak in somewhere before the end the way that Elizabeth, again, Human Resources Department Director here, Elizabeth Sabota Perry, is with us today, but the planning of long and short-term planning for the city is responsible in your office, too, so I want to talk about that, and if you're trying to implement any changes in terms of organizational policy or things like that, that's very important, too. That's all future-oriented, but I'd like to know how that happens. Obviously, the mayor has a great deal in terms of setting or approving those directions, but I think it's pretty important and a great responsibility to be part of that planning for the future too. So we'll try to get that in. Go ahead, Ned.
Yeah.
Fully give us the station ID and
yes.
our guest.
And I know you're all interested.
Of
we are
I
listening am. To Dearborn Heights News and Views, the monthly talk show program presented on the second Tuesday of every month, right here on WHFR on 89.3 FM, making waves from the Henry Ford Community College radio station broadcasting from Dearborn, Michigan. Your hosts today are myself, the council person of the city of Dearborn Heights, and Jay Koronek, who is the pro station advisor of WHFR. And our guest today is none other than Elizabeth Sabota Perry, the human resource person of the city of Dearborn Heights. So before we go into, I've always said half the budget has to do with the police and fire department of the city pretty much consumes half the budget. If people realize that, I think I'm right about that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But before we go into that, you're also involved with health care. Would you like to explain something about your involvement in health care?
Sure. So the Human Resource Department, will administer the benefits that we promise to employees. So they include health care. Of course, when you retire, if you have a vested pension and you have a vested health care benefit for you and your spouse or your family, we take care of the administration of that.
The pension plan pays for that, isn't it?
Well,
like when we were retiring people, we said, well, that's not coming out of our budget. It's coming out of the pension.
Like Act 345, there'll be money Act 345 is a special.
We're going to save that to the end. That's Act 345 is interesting.
Oh, the big finale, huh? Okay.
Mr. Killer. Okay. Shows on your taxes.
You need the treasurer, not the HR.
The health insurance.
Yeah, so the health insurance, I mean, it does the general government, it does come out of our budget. You're not going to see it administered by the pension plan. You know, it's covered. So, you know, how as many
employees. So when we say that, we're referring to their salaries, so their pension. We say when we give an early retirement and we say, okay, we got them off the payroll, we got them on the pension plan.
Right, but you still have them on their benefits. So.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Wanted to get that straight.
And any anticipated changes for the city in terms of payments or even just paperwork when Affordable Care Act begins rolling in 2014?
Right, so we've actually made a lot of changes in the more recent years, not mm-hmm. even in anticipation for this. You know, some of it was a cost savings measure, and I think when I had been at your radio station before, you know, I had mentioned that we tried to consolidate our plans to get everyone. We are in compliance. You know, we don't really have an issue where, you know, the Affordable Care Act, one of the provisions is that if you have an employee that's working what they're defining as a full-time schedule, that you have to provide them with health care benefits, even though you've considered them part-time. So a lot of places have employees that are working 40 hours a week, and they're not giving them benefits, even though they qualify for benefits under the Affordable Care Act. So for us, we don't really have that as a concern or consideration.
It's not a problem.
Not a problem for us.
Okay.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, where some of these things are implemented. It'll be interesting to see where some of our retiree health care plans, will they be subject to the Cadillac tax? What will that, you know, it's the health care.
Or will they go into the new exchanges?
Right. The health care premiums that the city of Dearborn Heights has seen, which isn't unseen in other communities, you know, they're going up by double digits. So we see 10% premium increases year over year, which is incredible.
Yeah, you might want to explain that. Well, what is it costing in average?
But the cost increases, if I may jump in here from my opinionated shows, and by the way, all opinions expressed on the forums are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. But two things. One is that the cost increases in healthcare that's the insurance companies. I mean, there's no government regulation of those costs per se, even in the so-called Obamacare. And that's, I think, the biggest failing. If you're going to do government healthcare, you have to get some control over these costs, some of which I don't think can be justified. But nonetheless, that's my opinion on that. The other issue is here in Dearborn, because of the Affordable Care Act, Dearborn has actually downgraded some of their employees to fewer hours, part-time employees to fewer hours, so that they don't have to provide insurance coverage to those current part-time people. Is that hour cutoff significant? Did something similar happen to anyone in Dearborn Heights?
I don't think our part-time people qualify for
it. Yeah, I've been watching it carefully. So even a couple of years ago, I started to make sure that part-timers were really working under that threshold. The other thing is the union contracts have kind of kept that in check. Some of the union contracts prohibit any part-timer from working over 20 hours and working no longer than 6 months.
That's quite low. Yeah, but yeah. I know in Dearborn, they had people working the part-time, which is fine, but then they did need them for overtime sometimes, and that would put them over the threshold, and then they would have to kick in the health benefits. So they've reduced them even more, understanding that sometimes they will give them that overtime, but even with the overtime, it won't go over the threshold. So that's tough. I think it's a little bit crazy anyway, but you haven't had that issue come up. Because some people, they had to lose about 10-15% of their regular pay here, those part-timers, just because the city wanted to watch out for those limits coming in and didn't want to have to pay for health care at all. Oh, well.
We're doing the same thing. We like to hire as many part-time people as we can. Elizabeth, we got about 7 or 8 minutes. Okay. If you can educate us on the police and the fire, their pensions, their programs, how they work. Essentially, the police and the fire, their pensions are based on 70% of their present income, their present salary.
Usually 80%.
Oh, I thought it was 70.
So Yeah, when you, it depends. It depends on the contract. When you reach a certain age, service requirements, some people are eligible to buy time. Some people have not had that opportunity because it's moved out. You know, we only offer
That's
it
an
for
interesting concept, buying time. If your job pays $40,000, you pay 5% of $40,000, which is like $2,000, and you can buy a year of service, which is absolutely too cheap.
Well, it depends. You know, it really depends on who is buying the time. You know, the cost factor is individualized for every person in general, unless there's a special provision when a person enters employment or it's a contractual thing. For a little while, AFSCME had a very defined benefit. You could only, it was like a 60-day window. If you didn't buy your time in that 60-day window, you can never elect at that price again.
Is it still 5% or did that time pass?
Well, that was for people that actually were qualified to take an early out.
Yeah, where they could purchase 3 years or something.
Right.
There was
and,
a limit.
And the other employees, many of which who were able to buy time but were not able to leave the organization because they did not have the numbers or did not meet the eligibility criteria, it was a much higher cost.
So our police and fire contracts, which are not up for a couple of years, are very lucrative. It's the pension. It's not so much their salary. I think a top-notch fireman or policeman, $60,000 a year. I've told them in a public hearing, I wouldn't do that job for $60,000. I wouldn't even do it for $120,000.
Well, you know, police and fire are some of the most dangerous jobs in the United States, at least the most dangerous major categories of jobs, and you would think that they should be better paid. Personal issues, I think teachers should be paid best of all. Talk about risk. But no, I'm not talking about risk, but I'm talking about the importance to our society. And but nonetheless, I agree with you, Ned, that's, you know, the kind of training and dedication and focus and concentration when they're needed, professionalism, all the laws and rules that they have to follow also as they go about their jobs, that's certainly true. But so do we talk about how many contract negotiations? There's 8 unions, and those contracts are not all in the same year, but there has been some reopening of contracts.
We renegotiated some of them when it's possible.
Right.
The important thing is the police and firemen's pensions are very lucrative. And we're contemplating a new hires of policemen not to be in the same program of what we presently have. I don't know how we end up doing that with our new hires, but
well, I just saw a conservative group in Michigan, the Mackinac Policy Center, and you can always predict what they're going to say, is that they don't like the fact that pensions for police and fire, specifically in this case in Allen Park, which is under emergency financial management,
yes,
they say are almost as high as the full-time salaries. But what struck me that they pointed out was you only have to do those jobs for 10 years and you can get the full pension. We don't have that. I mean, retirement is, what, 20 years, 30 years
right,
for police and fire?
Right.
It's
yeah,
usually your age in a certain number. You have to meet, like 75
yeah,
or 70.
I couldn't believe that's accurate. I hope it, well, it may be. And
well, that's why
that's
they're,
fine,
if
but
that's the case, that's why they went, they're going out of business.
I think a lot of
the first thing they'll do is break that pension.
Well, actually, no, because my daughter lives in Allen Park. The people there just passed a tax increase for themselves, making themselves pay the second highest taxes next to Detroit in this area. Whoa. But they are still under emergency financial management, but the emergency financial manager said, go ahead, we'll try to raise money this way. But they haven't cut back on any benefits, and they may not. But this conservative group pointed out, I couldn't believe police and fire would have only a 10 years service and then get almost their full pay.
It could be an exaggeration.
In retirement. Well, it just could be an error.
Well, in our case, it's 70 or 80% of what your base salary
yeah,
is.
It depends on, you know, how many years of service you have. You know, it's based on a factor. You know, so most of our people, when they're retiring, they're retiring in the window of 20 to 30 years of service.
Yes.
Can we finish up in our last couple of minutes and talk about the planning function of your office? Long-term, short-term planning for the city and organizational policy developments How much of that do you do? It's in your job description, but practically speaking, when can you jump in there each year? Or
yeah, actually, I've been very fortunate with this administration to have a voice at the table. And so, you know, we meet on a regular basis. We, you know, discuss things that are coming up, things that we need to plan for, like the Affordable Care Act. We've been discussing this for years.
She's the right hand of the mayor.
And, you know, we really have been, you know, I've been involved in budgeting. Actually, Chrissy's is right hand. I'm left handed, so.
Oh, gotcha. Good to point out.
No. So, you know, it's really important. If your personnel isn't in line, it throws off your budget. So, I mean, we do a lot of organizational planning. We know what positions we're going to have available coming up. So, because HR touches every single department, you know, I do have a good idea of, you know, who's going to be leaving, what our needs are going to be. So I've been very fortunate to be able to do the short and long-term plans.
Yes. Well, thank you, Elizabeth.
And thank you.
I wish we had more time. Sometimes you think you don't have enough time to cover things, and you might have blanks, but we don't have a blank. There's a lot more things we could have talked about. But this brings us to our closing and our information on how you could hear us on our podcast as well. Jay?
Yes, thank you, Elizabeth Sabata Perry, for being with us on Dearborn Heights News and Views.
Thanks.
I'm going to. Yes, you've been listening to the Heights News and Views, presented on the second Tuesday of every month on WHFR Dearborn, station making waves, 89.3 FM. This is WHFR Dearborn. This program is entirely on issues of interest to the residents of the city of Dearborn Heights, presented from 1 to 2 o'clock on the second Tuesday of every month, making waves. And check the internet, check our website, whfr.fm, and you can listen to this or any one of our other archive programs by selecting whfr.fm from the homepage, and the button is called Talk Show. Thank you very much for listening. And now, it's the best of Broadway.
WHFR, the station making waves, proudly presents The Best of Broadway, a program featuring the best of American musical theater. Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Joe, your host. We've taken care of your tickets. Now let me escort you through 2 hours of enjoyment of The Best of Broadway.